prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Melody Cederstrom. I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen, bringing you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for March 14th, 2023, and it is Tuesday.
Ugh.
I think that's what day it is. And
Hi, Dave. I'm not sure I can confirm it for you. One of those days. Excuse my voice in advance, ladies and gentlemen. And yes, happy National Potato Chip Day. And thank you, Utz Company, for 50 years of snacking pleasure. It's also National Pie Day. That is P-I, as in 3.14. Well, 3.1415, blah, 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 be more precise. We got 39 decimal points if you'd like. Pi is the ratio between the circumference of a circle and its diameter, or 22 divided by 7. It's been around almost 4,000 years, confounding math students, including myself, for generations since. Oh, I got through it.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're glad you did. So. You know, I saw a program one time, I think it was on radio somehow, and they actually was talking about how, from the very beginning, how all our math equations and the, you know, where they used to just, you know, maybe where you're measuring materials, it was an arm's length, and, you know, how they, and you know, began with the various weights and measures and so forth, and where they're actually kept, the original calculations are kept in, you know, a deep vault somewhere and so forth. And it really was kind of fascinating to, you know, and these things just didn't, you know, they just weren't around forever. They were, you know, they were created and they were, it really is fascinating to see and to know where these things come from and how they came about.
It is neat. I mean, it really wasn't, I mean, the Greek letter that we know it by, pi, wasn't introduced until 1706, I think, by this Welsh math guy, William Jones. But the Egyptians and Babylonians used it to build the pyramids and Sphinx.
Sphinx.
I almost said the other thing.
Yeah. Oops. Todd would have had to go. Anyway, I think people are waiting to see what gold and silver has done today. I mean, I'll tell you what, it has been an unusually crazy day beginning. Actually, it started on Friday. And you'd think with the markets being up a little bit, it would have brought a little bit of calm to the gold and silver market, but it really hasn't. So we did have some pressure in gold in the last hour of trade, down $10 in the New York spot price after market, 1904. Silver's down 12 pennies at 21.78. Platinum is down 18 at 992. Palladium is up $28 at 1,598. The USDX today is down 0.04 at 103.59. Crude oil took another beating today, $3, 71.55. Paper markets today, let me get to those. The Dow was higher by 300 points today, snapping a five-day losing streak. We had bank shares rebound a little bit today, 32,155. S&P was up 64 points at 3,920. The NASDAQ was up 2%, 11,428. European markets, I think they also had a turnaround, all of them mostly almost 2%, but Asia was all negative. And 10-year yield, 3.66, so it was moving up just a little bit. Natural gas was down again today, 2.58 to 2.58, down less than 1%. And I think the funniest thing today was on every time I turn on the if I was in the car and I turn on a financial program or listening to a brief program on TV, Charles Schwab had someone on there. Oh, talking about how they've saw significant inflows and that everything is okay and remain calm and which I don't know, sometimes that tells me just the opposite sometime if they're really trying to, if they're pitching it real hard that everything is okay, maybe it truly isn't as okay as what they want us to believe. There was another headline out there I saw today, Dave, that I thought was interesting. It was, let's see, let me bring up his name. And I think that Mohammed El Aryan, he actually said this yesterday, and I think we probably talked about it, but he said that unlimited deposit guarantee will be hard to reverse. We are now in a different world. And, you know, he's usually not a guy that is a gloom and doomer or, you know, is, you know, he's usually a pretty positive guy and usually on government side and so forth. But I do believe we are now in a different world. And yeah, you had, pardon?
It's the old, you did it for them, you got to do it for us thing. It's I agree with him. We are in a new reality.
We are. And that's not going to end well. It's just not going to, because it's not sustainable. And so the I'm not sure it's the reality of things, or maybe it is the reality of a new illusion was created. Moody's downgraded, cut its view on the entire banking system from stable to negative, you know, which amazes me, because here's a company. I mean, you know, you'd think after FTX that they would have been a little bit, you know, maybe would have moved stable to, you know, I don't know what's between stable and negative. Dave, do you?
There isn't anything. I mean, they're in terms of ratings, there's, you know, there's AAA, AA, right, single A, and there's like A1, A2. They're like, you know, in between. They're different versions of their ratings, but in terms of their overall system ratings, negative is bad.
Negative is bad.
I mean, stable is not ideal by any stretch, but it is fundamentally better than negative, which is just downright not good.
And but he says the change to negative is to reflect the rapid deterioration in the operating environment following of course, the run at Silicon Valley Bank, Silvergate Bank, and Signature Bank. And Moody's warned that it either was downgrading or placing on review for downgrades 7 individual institutions. And of course, now these moves are important because they will, I would think, impact the bank's credit ratings. It's going to make their borrowing costs more expensive. So, and if Moody's downgrades of the entire sector, the ratings agency noted the extraordinary actions taken to shore up impacted banks. But it also said other institutions with unrealized losses or uninsured depositors, you know what? They could still be at risk. So the Federal Reserve established a program to ensure the institutions hit with liquidity problems would have access to cash. We talked about these yesterday, where the Treasury Department backstopped the program with $25 billion in funds and vowed depositors with more than $250,000 at those two banks, SVB and Signature, would have full access to their funds, Dave.
Well, but concerns remain. Moody's report added that banks with substantial unrealized security losses and with non-retail and uninsured U.S. depositors may still be more sensitive to depositor competition or ultimate flight, with adverse effects on funding, liquidity, earnings, and capital. That's Moody speak for watch out, this thing ain't over yet. Bank stocks, interestingly, rallied this morning. I mean, first thing I saw when I turned on one news page was, you know, First Republic, which had gone down over 60% yesterday, excuse me, was up 50% this morning. The Spider Bank ETF rose 6.5% in morning trading. All the major U.S. indexes were also higher, as Melody mentioned. Now, Moody's downgraded Signature Bank, which had its own separate run on assets, and said it would remove all ratings on it. That ain't good either. Of course, that bank is about to be no more. It also placed other institutions under review for potential downgrades. First Republic, I just mentioned, Intrust Financial, UMB, Zions Bank Corp, Western Alliance, and Comerica. America's, we hear a lot these days in the news. Moody's noted that an extended period of low rates, interest rates, combined with pandemic-related fiscal and monetary stimulus have complicated bank operations over the last 2.5 years, 3 years, really. SVB, for instance, found itself with $16 billion in unrealized losses from the long-term treasuries it held. As yields continued to rise after, you know, 8 Fed hikes since last March, it eroded principal value of those bonds and created liquidity issues for the bank. SVB had to sell those bonds at a loss to meet its obligations to all the fleeing customers. I think $42 billion was the initial run. Moody said, we expect pressures to persist and be exacerbated by ongoing monetary policy tightening, with interest rates likely to remain higher for longer, again, until inflation gets back to the Fed's target range. Moody's also said they expect the economy to fall into recession later this year, further pressuring the industry. I'll spend the third segment talking more about SVG and the banking crisis.
Well, you know, I mean, this is really a prime example, because I keep hearing, Dave, that treasuries are so guaranteed by the government. You don't have to worry about it. You know, guaranteed, blah, blah, blah. They don't guarantee that you're not going to lose money on them, you know, right? Am I understanding that properly?
Right. Well, you know, there is this other entity known as SIPC. I am Security Investment Protection Corporation, for covered clients, protects, I think, up to 500,000 dollars in such losses. But I haven't seen any figures on how that may have maybe playing into the current situation, just the FDIC impact.
Yeah, yeah. But still, my point is people can lose money on those. That's not guaranteed.
Indeed.
That's not guaranteed. And there really is no guarantee when it comes to the Treasury. They can default on them.
Absolutely.
And so when people say they're guaranteed, they're not. They're not. They're only as good as the government. Inflation rises today. We had a report that came out. The consumer price index increased 0.4% last month. So it's putting the annual inflation rate at about 6%. And I think that's why we probably saw stocks gain today, thinking that the Fed will only do a 25 basis point. So it probably made them a little optimistic. Treasury yields that we saw plummet yesterday rebounded today. The two-year note was up 30 basis points to 4.33% by lunchtime. Even amid the current banking scares, the Fed will still prioritize price stability over growth and likely hike rates by another quarter point at the upcoming meeting. We had a decrease in energy costs, and that's what really one of the things that really helped keep the headline CPI reading in check. That sector fell 0.6% for the month. We had almost an 8% decline in fuel oil prices, of course, was the biggest mover for energy. But food prices rose an annual 9.5%, respectively. And meat, poultry, fish, and egg prices fell only marginally for the month. The first time that index retreated since December of 2021. We did see eggs tumbled, but hey, they're still up 55% from a year ago, Dave. So we saw shelter costs.
Yeah. I'm sorry. My wife has encouraged me to stop eating as many eggs as I do every day. So I've begun the Dave Allen egg rationing program we'll see what benefits.
Oh, how that works.
Yes, indeed, indeed. Yeah, shelter, I mean, makes up a third of the CPI, went up at an annual rate of 8.1%. Economist Lisa Sturtevant at Bright Multiple Listing Service said that it typically takes 6 months for new rent data to be reflected in the CPI. So that lagging indicator is only going to be fully understood again later on. So what I found interesting in this reading, Fed officials have turned to a, I don't know if it's new, but it certainly, I haven't seen it before. You know, we know that there are these core CPI and PCE and other indexed readings. But now there's super core inflation as part of their toolkit. That's apparently because of housing expectations. Core just doesn't cut it anymore. That entails core services inflation minus housing, which increased 3.7% from a year ago. So also a couple of other numbers, new vehicles up 5.8, used vehicles down 2.8. But markets were pricing a peak rate now, interest rate of about 4.9%, which implies the upcoming increase by the FOMC could be its last in this cycle. I have my strong doubts about that, Melody. The Fed is obsessed with bringing inflation down.
Yeah, yeah, but all they do is change the equation. So they know they can't get 2% on how they figure it now. So, okay, guys, you've got this long to come up with how can we adjust this so that we can, you know, show that we're fighting and we're beating inflation.
At some point, we're going to hear We'll talk about this next segment, I think. But at some point, we're going to hear the Fed say, well, maybe 3% is okay. We can live with 3.5%.
Yeah, which means it's really still probably 5%.
Indeed.
Hey, I hear the break, the music. I'm going to be leaving here a little bit early today, so Dave will be back to fill out the hour. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSC Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interest of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSCTalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And welcome back to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Dave Allen. Melody mentioned she's off early today preparing for being off for off the radio for a couple of days. Business will be open. So for all your gold and silver needs, call us at 1-800-375-4188 or look us up on the web at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. While you're there, sign up for our free weekly newsletter and blog. Now, just briefly here to start the second segment, the average on the 30-year fixed mortgage plummeted almost half a percentage point from 7.05 last Wednesday to 6.57% yesterday. It's according to Mortgage Daily News. Excuse me. On Friday, it was 6.76%. Mortgage rates loosely follow the yield in the 10-year Treasury, which again fell to a one-month low, responding to the Silicon Valley Bank and Signature Bank failure and the ensuing ripple through the banking sector. In real terms, for a buyer looking at a $500,000 home with 20% down payment on a 30-year fixed mortgage, the monthly payment this week is about $128 less than it was in the middle of last week. Still, that's higher than it was in January and a lot higher than it was last year. So what does it mean for the upcoming spring housing market? Spring, by the way, in just 1 week, hard to believe with this East Coast weather we're experiencing. In October, rates surged over 7%, and that started the real slowdown in home sales, but rates then started falling in December and were near 6% by the end of January. That caused a surprising 8% monthly jump in pending home sales, which is the National Association of Realtors measure of signed contracts on existing homes. We have sales of newly built homes, which the Census Bureau measures by signed contracts, also surged a lot higher than expected. Now, while the numbers for February aren't in yet, agents and builders have said sales took a big step back last month as rates shot higher. So if rates continue to drop now, buyers could return once again. But at this point, that's a big if. Now, in other economic news, Facebook parent Meta says it's laying off 10,000 more workers. And will incur restructuring costs ranging from $3 to $5 billion. Mark Zuckerberg, their CEO, warned that economic instability could continue for many years. In a message to employees, Zuckerberg said over the next couple of months, organization leaders, will announce restructuring plans focused on flattening our orgs, canceling lower priority projects, and reducing our hiring rates. He added that Meta plans to close 5,000 additional open roles that it hasn't yet filled. Now, in announcing these cuts, Meta said in its SEC filing that it expected lower total expenses this year between $86 and $92 billion. Now, this new round of 10,000 layoffs follows a previous round of cuts announced in November that affected more than 11,000 workers, which equated to roughly 13% of Meta's staff at that time. And again, it's all over the tech industry. Twilio, Dell, Zoom, eBay, Amazon also recently disclosed significant reductions. January, Google revealed plans to lay off more than 12,000 of its workers. Microsoft announced plans to cut 10,000 and Salesforce 7,000. Altogether, over the past year, the tech industry has now laid off 95,000 workers. Yikes. Good luck to those folks who haven't yet found new jobs. Well, let's talk a little bit more about yesterday, or the past few days, I should say. But there's a rush to safety in the bond market yesterday. A modest rally in tech stocks and still simmering worries, rightfully so, about banks. In general, things were getting a tad strange yesterday. Gold and silver and the major stock indexes were somewhat resilient, the latter despite massive jitters about the health of large regional banks after the collapse of SVB and Signature. The S&P 500 slipped 0.2% after staying in positive Terry most of the day, and the tech-heavy NASDAQ rose 0.5%. But regional bank shares plunged. I mentioned one of them, First Republic. There were others as well, and that was despite steps the government took on Sunday night to bolster the financial system. Again, the most notable drop, First Republic Bank, in California, which, like SVB, has a large number of deposits that are above the FDIC's 250,000 insurance limit, it collapsed by more than 60%, its share value. At first glance, it can be hard to square the idea of a simmering bank crisis with a stock market hanging in there, but some say there's a certain logic to it. The markets seem to be making a bet that the flare-up of this crisis likely marks the beginning of the end of the Fed's recent run of interest rate hikes. Again, we'll know soon enough if that's the case or to what extent it is. That picture is supported by prices from the Fed Funds future market, where investors slashed the odds that the Fed will hike rates by 0.5 percentage point at its next meeting to literally zero. The outperformance of tech stocks, which benefit hugely from lower interest rates, further underscores that expectations of lower rates, or at least fewer Fed hikes, are giving the markets at least a temporary lift. Now, today's release of February CPI could complicate the situation for the Fed as they try to balance the still unfinished fight against inflation against the risk that more rate hikes will push the banking system closer to the edge. Well, let's drill down a little bit. As Melody mentioned, money flooded into government bonds on Monday. The yield on the two-year Treasury note plunged by more than half a percentage point. Now, that may not sound like much, but in the world of government bonds, moves of that magnitude, incredibly rare. Last time we saw a one-day move this big was September 17, 2001, when the markets first reopened and then tumbled after the god-awful terrorist attacks. Besides that, the only day that comes close to that is October 21st, 1987, in the aftermath of the stock market crash that saw literally dozens of equity executives in particular jumping out of 50-story office windows. It was awful. Now, it's hard to say exactly what all this means because there are a lot of competing motivators at play. Time will tell, ladies and gentlemen. Stay tuned. Now, to see two bank failures in 1 year, as we have in 2023, isn't particularly unusual. I mean, there weren't any closures in 2021 or 2022, just four in 2020. But it's their dollar amounts that are particularly eye-popping. The size of Silicon Valley banks likely making it more difficult to regulators like the Fed, the Treasury Department, the Office of Controller, to find a buyer, which would usually be the ideal scenario for regulators cleaning up after a collapse like this. There aren't many financial institutions large enough to acquire a big regional bank with more than $50 billion in assets. That's according to FDI Chair Martin Grunberg. He said that 4 years ago. Now, the two bank failures this year, Signature Bank and SVB, had combined assets of over $319 billion. Now, most bank failures are way smaller. Over 98% of banks that have failed since 2007, in fact, had assets under $10 billion. The difference there, during the Great Recession, of course, is that there were lots and lots of failures. Oh, I am so sorry. For comparison's sake, Signature Bank had over $118 billion in assets. Silicon Valley, $209, and Silvergate Bank, $16 billion. Conversely, the four regional banks that failed in 2020 had average assets of just $114 million. A particular note, a failed bank is one that's been taken over by regulators. So Silvergate Bank, which announced last week that it's technically liquidating, doesn't count. But it's part of the overall equation of growing instability in the banking sector, perceived or real. The FDIC is trying again to auction off SVB after a similar effort failed over the weekend. I would guess once negotiations and some concessions are made, we'll be reading about a new buyer soon enough. But the crisis isn't over, far from it. In fact, it just may be getting started. So hold on to your hats. And here's an important one. If you missed this news yesterday, the old saying goes, perception is reality, right? Well, sometimes expectations become reality, especially in the world of inflation. We've talked about this a little bit before. Now, Americans' expectations for the near-term path of inflation ebbed to nearly a two-year low last month, which some say could take pressure off the Fed to raise rates next week amid fresh uncertainties created by turmoil in the banking system. In the first of a run of key readings on inflation, consumer spending, and sentiment that could determine whether the Fed presses on with interest rate hikes or pauses to measure the fallout from these bank failures, the New York Fed's latest survey of consumer expectations shows respondents saying inflation will stand at 4.2% a year from now. Now, that's a notable drop from both the current CPI, last month's CPI reading of 6%, and the 5% expectation by households in January. It's the lowest reading since 4% registered in May of 2021. Meanwhile, the expected level of inflation 3 years from now held steady at 2.7%, matching the level seen in October 2020, while expected inflation 5 years from now was seen hitting 2.6%. That's actually up a little bit from 2.5 in January. So again, our comments last segment about inflation's rates and whether the Fed will settle for something lower than 2 is based somewhat on the reality that if inflation actually meets these consumer expectations, as it often does, that could certainly give the Fed pause, depending on what else is going on at that point. Now, some analysts are now arguing against any rate increase next week, while others believe the economic outlook still calls for some more modest action to help bring price pressures down further. Even though, admittedly, there are lags in the time it takes for the rest of the economy to catch up to interest rate changes, 6 to 9 months, sometimes longer. In recent days, Fed officials had noted that what appeared to be a softening trend in price pressures was essentially a mirage. Sorry. In testimony to Congress last week for a House and a Senate committee on separate days, Fed Chair Jerome Powell made the case that the Fed would likely to be need to be more aggressive with its rate rise over time. Of course, both the consumer, the New York Fed survey, and Powell's testimony was made before the SVB and Signature crashes. On its own, the survey was probably a positive development for the Fed, other things being equal, as, again, the public's expected path of inflation helps drive the actual level of price pressures. Now, in very controversial news in the environmental / political sector, the Biden administration said it's approving a huge oil drilling project on Alaska's petroleum-rich North Slope. It's a major decision by President Biden that drew quick condemnation by various folks as flying in the face of his campaign pledges. The announcement came a day after the administration, in a move in the other direction towards conservation, said it would bar or limit drilling in some other areas of Alaska and the Arctic Ocean. Well, the approval of ConocoPhillips' Big Willow drilling project by the Bureau of Land Management will allow 3 drill sites, including up to 199 total wells. ConocoPhillips chair and CEO Ryan Lance called the order the right decision. Now, part of this, the Houston-based company will relinquish rights to about 68,000 acres of existing leases in the Alaskan National Petroleum Reserve. Very interesting. The Will Project could produce up to 180,000 barrels of oil a day, create an estimated 2,500 jobs during construction, 300, quote, permanent or long-term jobs, and generate billions of dollars in royalties and tax revenues for the federal, state, and local government. Senator Lisa Murkowski of Alaska, I believe she's now an independent, said the decision was good news for the country. The Eagles, they're telling us to take it easy. So that means it's time for a break. You're listening to Financial Survival. Stick around. We'll be back. Take a look at me. Come on, baby. Don't say baby. I gotta know if your sweet love is gonna save me. We may lose and we may win, but we will never be here again. So open up.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And one more time today, welcome back to Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen. 1-800-375-4188 or dgscoins.com. dgscoins, one word, .com. Our latest American Survival newsletter has hit the streets. I have an article in there that asks, when is a bailout not a bailout? Or conversely, when is a non-bailout a bailout? Similarly, is the past no guarantee of the future, or is past prologue, especially if you forget your history? Well, I spent some time Sunday night pondering Silicon Valley Bank's recent downfall, the event that led to it, and our government's reaction to it so far. Here's a shorter version of what we know today. Now, SVB was founded in California in 1983, so it's been around for a while. It became one of the country's top 20 banks, primarily by lending money to Silicon Valley and other startups. According to David Leonhardt, the New York Times, SVB's problem began in 2021 when many tech startups that were full with cash deposited large sums with this bank and others. SVB tried to maximize its return by investing those deposits in long-term treasuries and similar assets, which at the time, in normal times, yield more than short-term instruments. Turns out the Fed had other ideas, though, namely higher interest rates, and SVB's investments started losing value. Well, last week, its customers, especially venture capitalists and others with large amounts of cash in the bank in excess of the $250,000 insurable level, worried that SVB wouldn't have enough cash to repay them. And a classic bank run occurred. More than $40 billion in cash quickly fled SVB. George Bailey rolled out of his grave, and on Friday, federal regulators announced an old-fashioned takeover. Now, also on Friday, the customers of New York Signature Bank, who were haunted by memories of 2008, long lines stretching blocks with townspeople shouting at executives, a la "It's a Wonderful Life," plus the sudden collapse of SVB, withdrew more than $10 billion in deposits. Well, that run of deposits quickly led to the third largest bank failure in U.S. history. That's another story. Several SVB customers complained over the weekend that they wouldn't be able to pay their employees if they lost their money, which could lead to massive layoffs and other unintended consequences. And so federal regulators stepped in and announced that SVB and Signature were being taken over to protect depositors and the stability of the U.S. financial system in general. Ironically, former Congressman, lead sponsor of the financial reform Dodd-Frank Act, and now Signature Bank board member Barney Frank said this, quote, "We had no indication of problems until we got a deposit run late Friday, which was purely contagion from SVB. I think part of what happened was that the regulators wanted to send a very strong anti-crypto message." Excuse me, unquote. And the consequences have been strange, if somewhat limited for now. The fallout from the weekend's chaos had immediate ripple effects. As markets opened yesterday, investors were jumping to treasuries and to gold and silver, with yields on all major bond maturities taking a nosedive. As of late Monday morning, New York spot gold was up $48 over Friday, breaching the $1,922 mark before settling down. Silver was up $1.46 or 7% from Friday at $22.16. And yet U.S. stocks remained in positive territory as more traders saw the SVB debacle forcing the Fed to back off on a larger rate hike next week, which is pretty amazing considering that just last Friday, 50% of Fed future traders were betting that the FOMC would hike rates by 50 basis points on March 22nd. Today, none of them do. Zero. Nada. About 80% of them now do see a 25 basis point hike, and the other 20% betting on the status quo, i.e. no increase, up or down, no increase or decrease, keeping the Fed funds rate at a range of 4.5 to 4.75%. Now, Bloomberg News' Joe Wiesenthal said that that's a sigh of relief for SVB customers who, thanks to the Fed, Treasury Department, and FDIC, will have access to all of their money, not just the $250,000 the FDIC guarantees most depositors under federal law. We've been told that all of SVB's depositors are being protected and being made whole. That includes billionaires like entrepreneur Mark Cuban, who has a reported $10 to $11 million at SVB, to your grandmother living on Social Security, who has a checking account balance there of $100. SVB shareholders and bank executives, however, are getting nothing except pink slips for the execs and maybe flowers and apology note for shareholders from their broker. Wiesenthal says it has a whiff of tough-mindedness to it. It sounds like you're not just describing a bailout. You still believe in real capitalism. You don't want a repeat of anything like what happened in the great financial crisis with TARP and all that. Well, Wiesenthal believes the difference between this time and last isn't as broad as it first appears, in that the bailouts in 2008 were largely about protecting depositors too. But in 2008, the bailouts of mega banks like Citi and insurance companies like AIG were funded largely by U.S. taxpayers, with billions upon billions of federal government dollars injected into private companies. Plus, company executives were largely spared, except for those who, again, jumped out of their 50-story corner office. Today's crisis differs in that, as of now anyway, no taxpayer funds are being directly used anyway to protect all of SVB depositors. And the bank's executives involved here have already been fired as part of Washington's takeover. It certainly feels similar, though, doesn't it? The FDIC receives no funding from taxpayers per se. Instead, the FDIC assesses premiums on each member bank and accumulates them in a deposit insurance fund that it uses to pay its operating costs and the depositors of failed banks. The amount of each bank's premiums is based on its balance of insured deposits and the degree of risk it poses based on its capitalization and other factors. I couldn't find any premiums that were paid by SVB Signature. Now, without getting into the details of how and depositors are repaid, the main point is this. The law's intent is for depositors to be made whole, but only up to $250,000 per ownership category, of which there are several, per person, per bank. So to the extent the president or treasury secretary tells us that all depositors, regardless of how much above the $250,000 level they may have had in assets of SVB, or how high their personal net worth, annual income, or other means testing, metric is, will be made whole by the FDIC, then aren't they just robbing a future Peter to pay a current Paul? Some with more knowledge and insight than I in this subject matter have called that kind of scenario a Ponzi scheme. Well, whatever you call it, as of this morning, Wiesenthal projects there are CEOs of other banks who still have their jobs who likely would have been out of a job had it not been for the efforts to contain the SVB fallout. Then again, he adds, maybe SVB wasn't bailed out, a defensible view. But then, A, its customers were just like Citi's and AIG customers were, and B, other marginal banks were bailed out too. Those CEOs are still here, and their stock is not worth zero. He asks next, what's the point of even having this bailout debate? Everyone thinks bailouts are bad, don't they? So it's worth getting history right, that a lot of the impulses behind the latest actions aren't that different from the actions in the past. Some different details, a different scale, a different crisis, but similar motivations, similar instruments, and a similar end result for now. Perhaps more importantly, Wiesenthal add, it's hard to shake the feeling that over the last 72 hours or so, the U.S. financial system has changed profoundly. Melody suggested an area in the first segment. Will we ever pretend depositors aren't always fully covered ever again? And if so, why won't there just be a public option checking account service available to anyone at the Fed? Also, as part of the rescue, the Fed, with some Treasury backstop, is offering loans against certain collateral valued at par, helping to eliminate mark-to-market losses on certain bank holdings. Will this temporary elimination of interest rate risk for banks become permanent, he asks? At least this time around, things are more transparent, more out in the open, more up front, aren't they? And I can't help thinking that Joe Biden and Janet Yellen's comments, pledges, assurances that the American taxpayer has not bailed out Silicon Valley seems disingenuous and politically motivated. Well, maybe they are, maybe they aren't. I don't know. I think the answer lies somewhere in the near future. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, sometimes perceptions are wrong, but more often than not, perception is reality. Now, yesterday in a Silicon Valley Bank epilogue of sorts, did the Fed mislead or deceive Silicon Valley Bank leading to its demise? Well, good old Joe Wiesenthal writes today that Jerome Powell indicated in 2020 and 21 that rates would stay low for a long time. Remember that? And so SVB's investment managers apparently blindly went all in on the long end of the yield curve before getting hammered when rate hikes came in one after the other in response to hotter than expected transitory inflation. But Wiesenthal and others have never heard anyone in the market say before that investment managers at any type of institution just blindly follow the Fed's dot plots and take as gospel their rate trajectory. Everyone who is serious understands that those rate forecasts were and are subject to change as the data changes. Joe is right when he says it's up to outside participants to come up with their own views on where the data are going and then try to anticipate how the Fed would react to that data, given what it's already told us. But either way, investing is definitely not about saying the Fed told us this, thus we need to do that. Wiesenthal points to Matt Levine, who says that SVB is kind of a weird bank because of who its depositors were. Most banks will have a decent-sized book of normal loans to their clients, like mortgages, business loans, car loans, and so forth. And SVB did have some of that. But their overwhelming number of clients in the startup community just didn't need to do any borrowing at all. Venture capital raised ample amounts of startup funds. So SVB was limited in their investment opportunities, and long-term treasuries may have seemed like one of the safer options out there that would generate at least a little yield. Dan Davies adds that the big challenge for SVB or any bank is figuring out to do when it gets a sudden windfall of deposits, which happened to SVB and others during the venture capital startup boom. And as Davies and others note, people liked SVB because it offered more. It went out of the way to cater to the specific needs of the venture community. And so if the bank gets a sudden influx of new deposits and it wants to maintain its business model, it needs to generate a certain amount of income that, say, it couldn't get from investing in just short-term T-bills or money market mutual funds. And it's not, Powell didn't say, rates would stay low forever. However, the big story in the bank's collapse and its ultra-high exposure to a tight-knit community of depositors, many with uninsured amounts of cash at the bank, who all answer to the same influential VCs. If you're a bank, you might think you have thousands of individual depositors. But if those thousands take their cues from just a few highly influential investors, your depositors are really just those few influential investors. And so your investments are highly concentrated like SVB's were. Now, it's the fault of the bank managers and the bank supervisions for not appreciating the risk that was being taken from that depositor mix. In his newsletter, Matt Klein said, any bank can fail if enough depositors or other short-term creditors decide for whatever reason to redeem their claims. There is no level of risk manager or government support that can prevent a bank from creditors from asking to redeem in the first place. And if they make that choice anyway, the bank is toast. And the best case scenarios is that it can honor all of its obligations as it winds down its operations. Hey, thanks a lot for tuning in. I'll see you Thursday. Have a good night, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks, Todd. Bye-bye.